enough. I did not click the extra click. Talked about duties and principles to agents. Well, I told you what remedies that the principal could seek when the agent breaches, but what happens if the principal breaches? Well, there you go. Damages. Damages, damages, damages. But depending upon how naughty principal acts, they may be able to get punitive damages. It just depends. It just depends. I did not want to start without at least giving that to you. All right. If you weren't here, take a quick pick, because I'm flipping the page. Quick, take a quick pick. Quick pick, quick pick. Quick, 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 pick, 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 pick. Picture. Is how do we terminate a relationship? Obviously, we know, or at least you should know, and if you don't know, you better learn, the way to establish a relationship is if there's a principal, and there's an agent, and there's mutual consent, both agree to it, and of course, agent is subject to principal's control, and agent's working for the financial benefit. Principal. Well, what happens if they don't see eye to eye? Can you get out of an agency relationship? And the answer to that is yes. You can get out of any relationship. It may cost you some serious money, though, depending upon what type of relationship you're in. FYI, in my state and local government class yesterday, they asked about prenuptial agreements. I don't know how it was relevant to anything, but the question was asked, and we had an interesting discussion. But let me just tell you, if you try getting out of that relationship, particularly if you are a dude, pretty much think of it as half. At a minimum, you are losing half. All right. Other types of relationships are not as costly, thank God. So, how do we end a relationship? Well, one of the easiest ones is if the agent does what the principal wants. If the agent completes the quest, the relationship is terminated. So, for instance, I gave you guys the example of what I had to do for my son, being the good dad that I am. I signed the papers. I sent them to the law firm. The moment they acknowledge receipt, my power of attorney to sign the documents for him terminated by operation of law. It no longer exists because we achieved the goal. Questions on that one? Two. Oh, what am I doing? Oh, I see. I see. Other types specifically. Terms. I see what I did. Terms. If you get hired to work for a year, what happens when you get to day 366? You're no longer working for them. If you are make this relationship based on a term, I will do this for a month, I will do this for 6 months, I will do this for a year. You get to that, unless it's renewed, you're terminated. The relationship has ceased to be. But the key is, both have to agree in advance. Both have to agree in advance. If I'm going to hire you for 6 months, don't you think that's going to be a point that I'm going to put into my negotiations? Because my expectation is you're going to work for me for 6 months. And if you accept that, you are acknowledging that you're going to work for me for 6 months. Another way is if you are hired as an at-will agent. At-will. the vast majority of you will be at-will employees at the places that you are employed. Fewer and fewer businesses, unless you are in a professional type of enterprise or professional position, fewer and fewer enterprises use contracts anymore. At-will means you work for as long as you want to work, or you work for as long as your employer wants to keep you around. If the employer does not want to keep you around, you can be fired. Or, alternatively, you can quit if you don't want to work there either. You can have relationships that are the same way. So what happens if you volunteer at a local food pantry? What happens if you are working gratis, as it were, for free? Well, you can go and you can stay there for as long as you want to. The moment you don't want to be there, you can leave. You can't be sued. Typically, if there is an agency in place, it will be at the point up to you achieve the principal's goals. If the principal doesn't need you anymore, he's going to let you go. Uh-oh. What happens if there is wrongful termination? What happens if there is wrongful termination? This would be a situation where one or the other decided to walk, but in them walking, it violates the agreement. So, for instance, I, like the vast majority of the professors that you will have at Quinn Sigman Community College, have what's known as adjunct status. I'm only here part-time. Why do I do it? Well, I've been teaching for so long, I just like teaching. It's kind of like a hobby. But every single semester, I get a new contract. Every single semester, constantly. I think about 3 or 4 weeks into the semester, they have us sign up for what classes we want to teach or give our availability. And then by about 8 weeks in, they give us our assignment. So I already know what I'm doing next semester. My term is first day of class through when final grades are due. That's the term I am supposed to work. The college cannot fire me during that term unless I do something that is gross negligent or, of course, malicious. Crime. Shoot a student or something like that. Then I could get fired. But other than that, they cannot fire me during that term because I would be entitled to my whole pay. If I was to walk and just not show up, the college could disgorge any money that I have been paid. That's in the terms of the agreement. So basically, I'm locked in until the second or third week in May. So what I did is I gave you the term and I told you what wrongful termination would be if I left earlier or the college let me go. Questions on that?
Question.
Yes.
So I have seen where people give their 2 weeks notice and then the person bring that person in and say, we don't no longer need your services.
Yep.
Today's your last day. Do they have to pay them that 2 weeks?
Nope. No, they don't. Because because you give your 2 week notice, you do that out of courtesy. You're not required to do it unless you're in a contract. So if you work for a company and you get a 2 or 3 year contract, usually there's language in there and requirements of what's required in order for you to give your notice. So the best gig you could get is to work for a government agency. So our town manager, he has a 6 month window where before the end of the contract that he can give us his notice. And he has to give us a 6 month notice. If it's less than six, he has to give us at least a month. If he does not follow, because that's what we negotiate. If he does not follow that, we can basically terminate him and we can revoke some of the benefits that may be owed, like sick days, vacation time. But that's in the language of the contract. You don't have that writing, you're at will. So if your boss doesn't want to allow you to stay for 2 weeks, you're gone. All right, I already talked about accept gratuitous agent. If you work for free, you can end it, you know, no penalties. No penalties. All right, so the first way to terminate, we're all set. We're done with you. Second way to terminate an agency relationship, you can't do whatever it is you agreed to do. Some type of inability pops up. And there are multiple contingencies. Because ultimately, if either the principal or the agent is unable to perform whatever it is they're expected to do, by law, that terminates the relationship. So what's one of the ways that could happen? Well, if you require some type of licensure, and you in fact do not have the license, that will terminate the relationship. So I hire some guy to fix the plumbing in my house. He claims he's a licensed plumber. I do some investigation, and I find out he actually does not have a license. I can terminate the relationship. And the interesting thing is in Massachusetts, if you lie about licensure and you start work, even if you do the work well, the customer doesn't have to pay for it. The customer does not have to pay for it. So if you're going to claim you're going to be something, make sure you are. I have a license to be a lawyer. I am legally allowed to practice any area of law in Massachusetts. But if I forgot to renew my bar license next month, next month, my license to practice law would be forfeit. And if I attempted to do anything, I could be subject to criminal fines and penalties. So, depending upon what you do, you know, there are some serious consequences. But if you're hired to do a job and you claim you have a license and you don't, you're done. Relationship is over. Bankruptcy. If you're hired to do a task for a company and the company goes bankrupt, that terminates the relationship. The agent no longer needs to perform. Simultaneously, if the agent is hired to do work and they go bankrupt, they no longer have to perform. Y'all know what bankruptcy is, right? Bankruptcy is when you put yourself in such dire straits, you go to court. To get legal assistance and basically get some of your debt wiped off or some type of negotiated settlements. Companies go bankrupt all the time, mismanagement of funds. So if a company's going belly up, you don't have any relationship with them. Oh, if you die! If I hire you to go find me a motorcycle, and in the process of you searching, you die. Can I sue your estate because you didn't find me a motorcycle? No, you're dead. I hate to break it to you. You cannot perform if you're dead. Same is true if you suffer incapacity. You get in an accident. Oh, God, awful story. One of the kids that my son went to high school with and played baseball with for many years. He's got a horrible motorcycle accident. He's in a coma. Possibly going to be paralyzed. Might die. Made worse by the fact that he has like a 3-month-old baby. Awful, huh? But guess what? He's not legally obligated to show up to work. Because he's quite incapacitated. Ah! What happens if the agent betrays the principal? Well, if you are not loyal to the principal in all things, that act of disloyalty, by default, terminates the relationship. If the agent fails to represent the principal's interests, or lies about the principal, or lies to the principal, any type of misdealings terminates the relationship, and it alleviates the principal for being responsible for whatever it is the principal promised to do. So, if I hire you to go find me a Mercedes-Benz, and you bring back a 1983 Honda Civic with a nice little Mercedes logo on it, you didn't do what you're supposed to do. I'm not going to have to pay you because you breached the duty of loyalty. Questions? Again, a lot of this is self-evident if you think about it. It's common sense. But again, I'm just being a pain in the ass and I'm spelling it all out. Because if you go to the agency chapter, it says a lot of this stuff in there in your book. 3, things change. There's some type of significant change in circumstance that changed the ability of either side to perform. The two most common, the laws change. The laws change. I ask you to do something for me, but before you can do it, the government declares it to be illegal. Do you have a right to commit a crime? Do I have a right to compel you to commit a crime? No, so if the laws change and what we ever agreed to is now illegal, that terminates the relationship. Terminates the relationship. Here's a common one that's very frequent in business. Say you have an agreement to procure goods from an international company. But the treaty with the nation where the company is operated gets terminated by the president. If you don't have a legal right to do business with any company in that country, you're not going to buy whatever it is you're trying to get. The widgets or the whatchamacallits or the wahoozits. Agency must be based on legal activity in order for it to be enforceable in the courts. The other change in circumstance that's very common is whatever it is you are looking to get ceases to be. It gets lost, it gets destroyed. Think of those high-stakes art dealers. You know, there are really, really rich people that like spending lots and lots of money, accumulating lots and lots of pieces of art. I don't know why. I'm not really a big art guy. I'll go to a museum and I'll look at something and I'll be like, what is it? I hate abstract. I hate modern art. Just awful. Boring. But people dig it and they spend lots of money. Well, let's say I hire you to go buy a rare painting, and it turns out the building where the painting was housed catches on fire and burns to the ground. And that piece of art ceases to be. Well, you can't go find another one. So if I hired you to get that and it's not there anymore,
our relationship is terminated. And by the way, if it's terminated, that means you can't sue me and I can't sue you.
It's over and done. I don't know if I emphasize that. The only time out of all these you could get sued is a wrongful termination. Questions?
Okay.
Well, what happens when the relationship is terminated?
Well, again, this is pretty obvious. In general, the agent no longer has authority to act on the part of the principal.
So, the moment the relationship is terminated, the agent no longer has the authority to act on behalf of the principal. If the agent continues on their own accord, the agent will actually be liable for any damages that occur. So, if I hired you to go get me a car, and I end up getting the car myself, our relationship is terminated. I no longer need you to get a car. But you decide to go out and buy a car for me anyways. Well, our relationship is terminated. Am I going to be liable to pay you whatever you paid out of pocket to get me that car? No. As long as I gave you notice, I'm all set.
Not at all.
But there are some circumstances where even if the agency relationship is terminated, there are some duties that continue beyond termination. And by the way, in the real life world, this is where it can get costly. One, indemnification. Is there anyone in this room that does not know what indemnification means? Thank you for being honest. Indemnification is where someone basically provides you with some type of insurance or coverage
to protect you from future expenses or damages.
It's called indemnification. Indemnifying. So, let's say you go out and you get me a pallet of widgets. All right? You get me a pallet of widgets. You take your truck, you drive to wherever it is, you pick it up, you bring it back to me. Well, you didn't have all of the costs fully disclosed yet. You know, you got to factor in gas and other things.
Well, I would be obligated to obviously to pay you for the pallet, and I would be obligated to pay you whatever expenses.
Even if you didn't have them at hand at the point when you delivered, I would have to just wait until you get whatever bills are coming in,
whatever we agreed to, and I would have to cover it. Couldn't leave you in a position where you were harmed. Here's a real life one.
Mrs. Professor Lemanic, at one point in one of her past lives, worked for an international biotech company developing pharmaceuticals. She actually has two patents of things that she invented. Mrs. Professor Lemanic is definitely the smart one in the relationship. Not this guy. But she had to engage with the patent in negotiations with foreign companies. Through, basically, she had to give consent
that the company which would develop the device could actually sell it. She gets no residuals, though. She got a lump sum.
Well, here's the thing. If something ever happened in terms of liability because of that device that was patented in her name, the company has to basically provide her legal services and could have to cover any expenses if she was personally sued, even though she no longer works for the company.
Why? Well, the company continues to make money off of her work. Well, they have to protect her from any liability for that work. And on the other side, I know it's low, confidential information. Confidential information.
Both agents and principals are required to keep confidential information in perpetuity, forever. So let's say you get a job at Kentucky Fried Chicken. And because of your position, you get access to the Colonel's secret recipe. Even if you no longer work at Kentucky Fried Chicken, you will be forced to sign an NDA, Non-Disclosure Act. And if you basically share that confidential information, you will be liable, probably for compensatory and possibly punitive damages for violating that NDA, the Non-Disclosure Act.
What if principal doesn't follow their terms of the agreement?
Like how?
I'll use real life.
Okay.
The school system was supposed to release records, like to remove things off of my son's record. School system never did it. We signed something saying that we would never discuss what was our agreement, which we haven't, but they didn't follow through. That stayed on his record. So they did not follow through with their...
So they're in breach.
So then if we start talking about it, we're not...
Correct.
We can't be held responsible.
Correct, because the moment the agreement's breached, the agreement doesn't exist anymore. But if it's significant enough, serious enough, you could have a possible law claim, legal claim against them, so long as it's in the statute of limitations.
Yeah, we choose not to.
Okay.
Easier not to.
Gotcha.
Just kind of go with the flow.
Right.
Cost more money to try and fight it then.
Yeah. Sometimes there are certain hills that are worth dying for and other hills not so much. Gotcha. Any other questions? So again, I hate to shatter your false perspective of reality, but there are things that you will do when you do the adulting that could have serious legal ramifications. So definitely be mindful of the circumstance that you are in and be aware of any lingering consequences that could remain. Because the last thing you want to do is be sued for something you did a long time ago. Now, what happens if, as the result of the relationship, the agent, while acting for the principal, commits a tortious or criminal action? Well, we actually did a case. We did a case that had this in it. Think the beepers. Boop, boop, boop. And the backup truck had the faulty backup alarm. And the dump truck ran over a cop. Yes, the driver got in trouble, but so did the company. Why? Well, because the driver at the time was working on behalf of the company. So, if the agent commits a crime or a tort, the act must happen when
They're on the clock. If you work for someone and you commit a crime or a tort off the clock, that's not your employer's fault. That's on you. But if you do it and you're on the clock, the boss may be liable. And what's going to increase the likelihood? You're not only on the clock, but you're doing something that the boss wanted you to do. You're following directions. So, you get hired to work for Amazon. You're driving your little blue van or gray van or whatever the hell color they are now. You know how they do it in New York City? I was fascinated by how they deliver Amazon packages in New York City. Never seen anything quite like it. They bring in a big box truck into a neighborhood. They stop the truck, and on the back of the big box truck are all the individual packages. And some of the packages are broken up, and Amazon delivery people literally take like shopping bags and they start walking. Others, they have like these little cubes that they put on these little bicycles. So it's like a little bicycle and there's like a little flatbed on the back and they put the trunk there. The neatest thing I saw was one was like an e-motorcycle. You know, I was just like, whoa, look at that. The cutest one was a little lady that worked for Amazon and she had like a little kid's bracket. Look at all. But I had never thought about that. How the hell does Amazon, because I live out in Sutton, you know, basically the suburbs. The truck comes in my driveway and drops the stuff off on my porch. But I got to see how they did in the city. And I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. Sorry, side note. But let's say the Amazon driver is on the clock, driving the truck, and runs over a little girl who's chasing a ball into the street. Will Amazon be liable? Well, is the driver on the clock? Yes. Is he doing what he's supposed to be doing? Yes. Is the principal going to make money on it? Yes. But here's the last one. Is what they were doing within the scope of the employment? In my example, is the person who hit the girl an Amazon driver? Yes, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, driving the van. Amazon would be liable. Now, the driver would also be liable, but so would the principal. But let's say that you work for Amazon and you are a warehouse person. And you decide, I don't want to work in the warehouse today, so I'm going to take a van and I'm going to go help my buddy out and I'll go deliver some packages for him. And you run over the little girl. Do you work for the company? Yes. Are you on the clock? Yes. Are you doing something the company's going to make money? Yes. But are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? So if you're not acting within the scope, no liability for principal. Think of the beepers. Beep, 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 beep. Guy took a truck out, knew it was faulty. Company let him go. Why? Because he delivers. He liked his particular truck. He was comfortable driving it. He was on the clock. He was making the delivery. And when he killed the cop, was he actually doing what he was supposed to be doing? Dropping off asphalt. So the company in that instance would be liable.
Question.
I think it was like $3,500.
So let's say, like you said, that the person is works inside and they're short of staff and they ask them to.
That's different. If they're short of staff and the company asks you to, then you are acting within the scope. But in my hypothetical, the worker decided to do it out of the kindness of their own heart without being asked. Different scenario. So, if you are a lifeguard and you work at a town beach and you notice that the DPW hasn't been down to the town beach in a while, hasn't cut the grass, and you decided to take it upon yourself and take the lawnmower out of the shed and go cut the grass, and a rock
hits, or the blade hits a rock and it goes flying out of the chute. And it embeds itself into someone who's trying to sunbathe. It kills them dead! Is the town going to be liable? It depends on if one of the duties that you were assigned was cutting the grass. If you were not supposed to, then no. But if the boss asks you to, then yes, because that's within the scope. Yes?
Is that where the wording duties as assigned would fit in?
Yep. Yep. 100%. Like I said, the law does not forgive ignorance. Know what it is you're supposed to do. And sometimes when you think you're being a good little doobie, trying to get a few extra gold stars on your forehead to help out, you could be putting yourself at risk. As well as the company. FYI. What if it's negligence? So we know what an intentional tort is. The person did something intentionally that resulted in harm of another to another. We know what a crime is. An intentional act that violates the law. What about negligence? Unintentional. You just do something dumb. Well, it depends. A principal is liable when all of these three up here apply. I think that's what I did. Yep, that's what I did. So if you're on the clock, you're acting for the benefit, you're doing something within the scope of employment, you do something dumb, boss is going to be liable. But if all three do not apply, then no. Let's say you work for Baja's, and your job is to make the tacos. And you reach up on the shelf, and instead of grabbing the taco spice, you get the cockroach killer and put it in the tacos, and you kill someone dead. Are you going to be liable? Hell yeah! Duty breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm, all apply. But as your boss, yes. In that instance, yes. But, let's say you clock out, you get in your car, and you run over a Quincy student whose belly is aching after sitting through Lemanic's class for 75 minutes and just needs a taco or a quesadilla. And you get squished in the parking lot, or you squish someone in the parking lot. Is the company going to be liable? No, because you're not on the clock. Even though it's on the company's property. Company will only be liable for negligence if you're on the clock, you're doing what the company wants you to do for the benefit of the company, and it's within the scope of your duties. Yes?
How does break time and lunchtime work on that?
You're still on the clock. Because by law, the company has to give you a break. They have to give you lunch. Now, here's the thing. If you take your lunch and you leave the property and you do something stupid, not at all. Not at all. But if you're on the company property and you're in the bank room and you do something negligent, then yes. All right. For intentional torts. Generally, a principal will not be liable unless whatever it is that was the intentional act was intended for the benefit of the principal. I told you about the story when I tackled the kid who tried stealing the bottle of booze, right? Mm-hmm. Good thing the kid didn't sue. There's no way I didn't crack any of his ribs, or at least bruise him. I hit him hard. Well, why did I act like a dumbass? I'm gonna get that bottle of booze back from my boss. Committed assault and battery.
The other way is if the boss doesn't do a background check. The other way that the principal could be liable for an intentional tort of an employee or an agent is if they don't do a background check. Let's say hypothetically, Disney World hires an employee to dress up as one of the characters and doesn't do a background check, and it turns out that person likes sexually assaulting little kids. And one day, Mickey Mouse is going down the street, oh, hi boys and girls, and gropes a feel on a little kitty. Is Disney World going to be liable? 100%. 100%. Companies have a legal duty to their customers to do background checks on all their employees. And if they don't, they will be liable. But if they did do the background check and that employee had no priors, and then as they're sitting there sweating in the 93 degree humidity of 100% temperature in that big fursuit, they lose their mind and start coughing feels. That's a different scenario. It will not be. So long as the company can prove they did their due diligence. Oh man, just think of the hypotheticals that I can put on your test that you're going to take this weekend for these types of little factoids. Now, what happens if it's the agent that does torts? Well, just because they're working for somebody else, they are liable for everything they do. You're not going to get indemnified if you work for a company and you commit an unintentional tort while on the clock. That doesn't work. That does not work at all whatsoever. Why? Duh, obvious. Obvious, the employee decided to do something dumb. And lastly, what about for criminal acts? Because we did crimes as well. The key, in order to hold the principal liable, is if the criminal act was authorized. If the employee committed a crime that was not authorized, the principal will not be liable. The chemical case that we did with the vat of, was it arsenic or cyanide? The one with the silver extraction. That company, at the end of all of the appeals, was not held criminally liable for the acts of the managers because there was no directive from the company not to give employees PPE. So in that instance, all of the employees were held were responsible for manslaughter, the unintentional killing of another human being.
The one that recently happened, I think it was in Lowell or something like that, the gas, the chimney, like when...
Oh, the house blew up?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, that was,
it
was about 3 or 4 months ago. I think that's still subject to investigation. I don't think that was determined to be a criminal act. I think that was determined to be negligent. But again, I don't know if they've assessed fault yet. I remember the story, I just don't remember what the outcome was. Other questions? What happens if it's a corporation? Well, corporation may be criminal liable if The agent is management. And they're acting within the scope of their duties. And I think there's one more. And whatever they're doing benefits both the agents and the principals. So, you go into Jiffy Lube to get an oil change, and the company's kind of struggling financially because of the increased prices in oil and other types of petroleum products. So the manager decides we're going to save some money by not changing all of the oil. Instead of doing the full oil change, we're only going to change 40% out of the 5 quarts that it takes to fill your engine. They're only going to give you 2 new quarts of oil. Because that's enough. Just kind of like, let's just loosen up the cup. That's good enough. Well, if a result of that action occurs, and people start suffering engine failure or some type of damage as a result of that act, which financially benefited both, because if the company isn't spending them enough money, don't you think the manager's going to get some type of bonus? Well, in that instance, Jiffy Lube as a corporation could be held criminally liable for that act. Questions? All right, we have 2 cases to do, and then we're going to call it a class. We have the chemical leaking case, and we have the jet ski case, if I remember correctly, right? All right, let me see. Right. Oh, there we go. New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection versus Alden Leeds. All right. Here we go. What's the issue?
Does the air pollution impose strict liability on a company for releasing toxic chemicals?
Oh, you've got to say it much louder and much prouder than that.
Does the air pollution impose strict liability on a company for releasing toxic chemicals in the air due to a fire unknown where, like, origin comes from?
All right. So does the releasing of air pollution result in strict liability? What do we got for a rule? Or how about this? What is strict liability? We'll do a little review first. What is strict liability?
When a party engages in inherently dangerous activity and harm results. Harm resulting regardless of fault or intent.
All right, there you go. So you will be held strictly liable if you do something that's ultra hazardous. Right? That's all it takes. Something that's super ultra hazardous. And it doesn't mean if you meant to do it or not. We don't look at intent. We don't look at negligence. It's just, did you do it? Simple. Easy. Rule of strict liability. Yes, if ultra hazardous. Okay, very good. Someone give me some facts here. By the way, I remember when this happened. What happened in this particular case?
A chemical company stored hazardous substances, including chlorine.
All right, hold on a second. Chemical company. What do you think they're in the business of dealing?
Chemicals.
Now, are chemicals safe? No, not at all. Does the law make certain chemicals illegal? If the law makes a certain chemical illegal, can anyone legally sell it? Now remember, you do not have to commit a crime. You don't have a right to commit a crime. So obviously they're selling chemicals that are not so good, but they're legally allowed to do so. Okay? And what was the type of chemical you said? And chlorine. What's chlorine used for?
Pools.
What does it do with pools? What? How does it clean it? Yeah, but chemically speaking, what does it do?
Balances the pH level of the water.
Yeah, it kills bacteria and helps bring balance. So that way more bacteria. Have you ever gone into a pool that smelled weird? Not like chlorine, but just smelled like there, or the water felt like kind of slimy? Go into that type of pool, that means the pH is off and you got to do some shock treatment.
Who goes into that?
Well,
who would go into a pool like that?
Well, if it's really hot, you never know.
Oh no. Pool.
I'll take a shower before that.
Like it's right. Timmy Joe grinding.
Well, I didn't say the water was like green. It just felt like a little, just something like slimy. All right.
It feels
so,
slimy. It looks slimy. There's definitely questioning the somebody's mental capacity of looking. If it's going to be slimy, it's going to look slimy.
Okay, all you need to do is just go sit on a sidewalk bench and look at the people who walk by. Just saying. All right, anyways, so, on that happy note, so, we got chemicals. Obviously, they're allowed to sell them. Does anyone have a pool at home? No, none of you have pools at home? They're both the best and the worst things. We got an above-ground pool, and I keep waiting until my wife gives me permission to drive my truck into it. Because it costs hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And we don't really use it anymore, because we got it when my kids were young. And we do go in it occasionally. I'll tell you, the good is, like, if it's a really hot day, I've got, like, a little float that I sit on. And I have one adult beverage in one cup holder and another adult beverage in the other one. And I usually have at least one or two, maybe in my hand, depending on whether or not I want to get on the pool. And that's just a lovely, lovely experience. I enjoy it thoroughly. But other than that, pain in the ass. And yes, you have to buy chlorine. You have to put lots in it. Because if it doesn't smell chlorine-y, there could be bad, yucky things growing in it. So, they're not doing anything illegal. Okay. So we're not getting sued for them selling this stuff. What happened?
A fire happened.
Fire happened?
Releasing toxic gas into the air with a fire.
Who started the fire?
This is of unknown origin, so we don't know how the fire.
Spontaneous combustion? Whoa, how does that happen? You think so? Oh, no. Have you ever seen on the news that, like, for instance, someone was staining and they had oil stain on their cloth rag and they didn't clean it out properly? Chemicals can react with other chemicals and ignite.
See, it was an individual. He didn't clean it right.
Well, we don't know what happened. Was there anybody there? Why not?
It was Easter.
Oh, it was even a holiday. Oh. Easter, very important day. Very important day. He does rise on Easter after all. So no one was there working. No, alright. Well, they couldn't find like an atheist or, I don't know, a Jewish person, somebody. Nobody was working. So no one's there. Chemical reaction, fire. Probably got really big really fast, yeah? By the way, I remember watching this on the news. The chemical cloud was so big, it actually shut down the New Jersey Turnpike. They had to shut it down for like 10 miles. Because this was bad, bad, bad. And people did get sick. Because what happens when you ingest chemicals? What happens if the chemicals burn and mix with other chemicals? You still get sick. Okay, so who sued who in this case?
The New Jersey Department
The government sued. Oh, what was the government suing them over? I understand that's what the claim that they had, but why do you think the government was suing this company?
Pollution.
Does it matter if they stored it right? Does it matter if they had proper procedures in place? Does it matter if they had a smoke alarm or fire suppression? No, why? No. Strict liability. Does it matter if they were doing everything right?
No.
Why not?
Just the fact that they were storing that many chemicals.
The law says if anything happens and you're storing chemicals, you're going to be responsible. Does the company have any type of defense? I mean, they tried. Oh, it was a Sunday. We didn't have anyone there. We had everything right. Everything was fine. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. This statute, I put the statute in there, right? Did I put reference to the actual statute under New Jersey law? The law itself, the law's name, I thought I put it in there. I might have cut it out. But the statute itself, if you read the language, it says if you are licensed to handle these types of chemicals, you will be held strictly liable for any harm that ensues. So guess what the company had to pay? A lot. A lot. They had to pay medical bills. They had to pay compensation for any property damage that was suffered.
I don't think punitive damages were imposed, though.
Would this be similar to that train derailment that happened in Ohio?
Yes.
Within like the past 10 years?
Yeah. Oh, that was awful. They still haven't cleaned it all up.
No. It's because it's Ohio.
Oh, yeah, because that was a red state, right? Yeah, that last administration. Okay. That's politics. Any questions on this case? There's really nothing to debate. If the law says, if you do this, you will be held strictly liable, none of the other facts matter. If you commit harm, you will be held liable for all damages incurred.
All right, the other case was the jet ski case.
This is a good thing to be aware of as well. I lost my marker. No, I didn't. It's in my pocket. All right, jet ski case. I forgot what the case is called. What's the issue?
Whether the doctrine of primary assumption of risk applies to bar recovery when a passenger on a personal watercraft is injured in a collision.
Assumption of risk on jet ski. What's the law for assumption of risk? Got a rule?
Participants in a sport or recreational activity assume the inherent risks of that activity.
Very good. If you do something like a sport or a recreational activity, and you do it consensually, you assume all risk for anything that could happen. All right, what happened in this case? Let's see if somebody assumed the risk. Facts. What do you got?
They sued for a wrongful death with the collision of two jet skis.
Someone died? On a jet ski? Aw, oh, man. What's a jet ski?
A water, I guess, sport.
Like, what do you mean,
water sport? Like a water, like.
Is it like with ball?
No.
Or is it with one of those noodle-y things? What's a jet ski?
I'll think of like a motorcycle on the water.
Good description. It's a personal watercraft that goes very, very, very fast. Okay. So, would a reasonable person think that if you were to drive said personal watercraft, that you will never sustain any type of injury? Mm-hmm. Why?
Because they go really fast.
They go really fast. Can they stop quick?
Depends. I mean, usually...
No, they cannot stop quick.
Well, don't, like, the ones you have, like, if you take it out, it just stops.
Well, it will kill the engine, but you're still going to go.
So, yeah. And they have a speed limit of 35 miles an hour.
On a jet ski, if you go 35, that feels like you're going really fast. My jet ski can go 60. I've only done it on the lake once, and I was scared. But 35, yeah. By the way, speed limit for water? What's up with that?
I think so, to prevent something like this.
Wait, hold on. You're gonna dampen somebody's chance to have fun on a lake by imposing a speed limit? Can you stop a boat on a dime? Can you stop anything on the water on a dime? No. But if you reduce the speed, what do you might have the ability to do? Maybe not stop, but maybe you have a better chance to avoid.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same thing driving a car, by the way. The slower you go, the more reaction time you have. Just saying. Whereas the faster you go, the likelihood of you being able to have the hand-eye coordination to do the jerk just the right way, to get the motor or whatever it is to tilt, to get the watercraft to change its direction just enough to miss. No, I know they do it in Hollywood, but it doesn't happen in real life. In addition to my jet ski, I do have a pontoon boat. That thing is like a barge. So, you impose speed limits on lakes to limit the likelihood of an accident. Will it stop all accidents?
No.
No. All right. Have you ever been on a jet ski?
Yeah.
Okay. When you're going and having the fun on the water and you hit the wind, you're feeling your whole body jerk up and down. What happens to your senses?
They're kind of heightened, I guess.
Are they?
Not really. They feel.
You can
more.
Suddenly see better. You can hear better.
I don't know. But just well, you're having fun. You're just bouncing up and down, like.
Okay. Yeah. So you're having fun. So chances are, where are you looking?
Just straight, wherever you're going.
Okay, where could harm come from, though, if you're on the middle of the lake?
Sides.
Do you have the ability to turn your head around like an owl? No. And plus, what happens if you're going and suddenly you start going like this?
You probably, like,
just
go the other way.
Yeah, you might lose control if you're not watching where you're going, okay. And what about the, how does that impact hearing?
You can't hear very well.
No, because what do you hear a lot of?
Just the water.
And?
Motor.
And your motor, right. You hear what basically you're on, and probably not much more. Okay, very good. I only ask that because I don't think I've ever asked this question yet today. Is there anyone ever not been on a jet ski? Well, okay, well, most of the class, all right. It's fun, but it's dangerous. Okay, so they're out there. Oh, who's they, by the way?
Rachel... I'll just go with the last name, Trong and
Win. Trong and Win, I think. I think that's a Korean name. I think that's Win.
It's Vietnamese.
Oh, Vietnamese? Okay. So, wait, there's two people on it?
No, I think it's two different.
Like,
there's two people on one and one person on
the other. Oh, okay. So you got your jet ski. You got one person driving, and you got one person as a passenger. All right. What is the difference between driving the jet ski and being the passenger on a jet ski? Like what?
the person in the back needs to hold on.
Okay.
And then in the front, it's kind of harder to drive when there's two people. So.
Well, if you have a small jet ski, yes.
Yeah.
But if you have a big one, no.
But they have those vests that, because my son and my husband got on it, and they had a vest where they put it on him, and my husband put his, and it held, like, they held them together.
Oh, that's scary. That for some reason. How old is your kid?
He was young.
All right, if he's a kid, all right, yeah. I was going to say, as an adult, I don't know if I would want to be
and
strapped to
drive
him. And
it wasn't here. It was like, I think it was the Dominican Republic.
But still, I don't know if I would want to be strapped to the driver. Because what does the driver get to do that the passenger does not? Drive! Yeah, exactly. So, even if this person is looking around and sees things, it's loud. But this person ultimately is in control. And chances are, he's looking straight ahead. You said there was another jet ski?
Yeah.
What did the other jet ski do? Did they race? Did they do like Evel Knievel jumps?
Probably. No, they were just driving, yeah.
They were just driving. Where was the other one driving?
These guys made a turn to go back home. Cut through the middle.
Did they follow the rules of the lake? Oh, by the way, there are driving rules on the lake. Did you know that? It's just like driving on the road. The expectation is if this is your pond, you're supposed to stay on the right-hand side and go around the lake. This is the flow. What did this jet ski person decide to do?
Cut through their middle.
Did they do it slowly? And then as they're cutting through, what happens? Did they hit a jet ski or did a jet ski hit them?
A jet ski hit them.
Oh, why do you think the other jet ski came in and hit them?
They were supposed to be.
So they were doing something they weren't supposed to do, and this guy might have been. This guy was probably going, looking ahead, and he probably didn't see them cutting across until it was too late. And can you stop jet skis on the dime? So do you think they had the oh shit moment? Oh, I'm sure they did. But it's kind of like, oh shit, and there's nothing you can do about it. Bam! What harm did they suffer? The passenger died? Man. I don't know if I ever want to ride bench on a jet ski again. You could die? Damn. I want to sue. Or I think she wanted to sue. Actually, could she sue?
Her estate.
Oh, she was dead. So her estate did. And who was acting as the guardians of her estate?
Anthony.
Who's Anthony? I thought it was her parents.
I think it was because Anthony was named as a defendant.
Yeah, Anthony was the guy who hit them.
No, Anthony and Rachel were together.
Anthony was the driver.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely want to sue the driver. Because what did the driver not do?
Follow the rules.
Follow the rules. Oh, but does Anthony have a potential defense to the claim of negligence?
Yes.
You're saying no, but I hear yes over here. How many people say, no, Anthony has to pay everything? How many people say yes? What type of defense could Anthony raise to the alleged claim of negligence?
Assumption of risk.
Which is what?
That they knew that they would take the risk that something could happen if you go voluntarily engaging in jet skiing.
If you make the conscious choice and give consent to put yourself in a situation where you could be harmed, and a reasonable person would know you could be harmed, and you get harmed, the party that you're suing has the defense. You assume the risk. You assume the risk. An assumption of risk is an absolute defense. It will cure
plaintiff from any liability. Sorry, defendant. All right. It will cure defendant from any liability because it's an absolute defense. So, long story short, I'm going to bring it back to something that I shared with you. A little bit of fatherly advice that I gave to my kids from the point when they were knee-high. Don't be dumb. Questions? All right, you're going to have an exam. You're going to have an exam because we're all done with all the stuff in the second exam. Would you like the exam today? Would you like the exam tomorrow? That would be Thursday. Would you like the exam Friday? Would you like the exam on Saturday? Would you like the exam on Sunday?
Monday.
Would you like the exam on Monday, which is a holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah, Patriots Day.
Patriots Day.
All right, so you shall celebrate Lexington and Concord, the sacrifice made by our forefathers by taking the second business law exam. It will be on Blackboard. It will be accessible. Just put them on this desk. It will be accessible from 8 a.m. and it will remain open till 11:59 p.m. It will be structured identically the same as the last exam. So 25 multiple choice questions or so, 5 fill in the blanks, and 2 essay questions. One for full credit, the other for extra credit, for a maximum score of 110 points.